It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about your empowerment with knowledge so you can save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. If you have a question for me, go to clark.com/ask. Coming up in just a few minutes, today's Clark Rage is an odd thing. Do you think it's a good idea for a second grader to have a credit card? I'll fill you in. And coming up yet later, there's a change going on in medicine you got to know about. And if you don't understand how it plays, it can demolish your wallet. I'm going to tell you the key stuff you need to know. I want to talk about something that I'm getting a distressingly larger number of calls about. You know, we track every call that goes into our off-air center, and you may not be aware, but we offer free off-the-air advice over 40 hours each week where you can talk with a member of Team Clark. And we have a database where we see what people are calling about, what scams there are, things like that. And so we know every single topic that is front of mind with people, from what's the most calls coming in about or most questions coming in about to the least. And there's a trend that is not your wallet's friend right now. The number of calls we're getting about reverse mortgages is going up, up, and away. And it may be because there are all these ads from older actors, people who maybe were real name brand actors earlier in their career. Is there such a term as name brand actors? Anyway, who are very recognizable to people of a certain age, and they're doing these pitches for reverse mortgages and telling you how great they are. Well, I want you to know that there's almost no circumstance where it makes sense to do a reverse mortgage. The pitch is that if you are older and you don't have enough money to pay for life, but you substantially own your house or own it free and clear, you can turn your house into basically an ATM and have your house pay you money every month. It's one way they're done. Others are where you kind of like have a line of credit you can draw on, but you don't have to pay it back ever. And so it sounds very appealing. The problem is reverse mortgages are terrifying in the fees you have to pay up front. They are massive, massive fees. And it seems like it's a great deal if you live a really long time under a reverse mortgage, but all it does is it steadily destroys the equity in the home. If you had family members that you hoped would inherit from you, then there's not going to be an inheritance because it'll be wiped out by the reverse mortgage. And once you're in, you're in. And there are circumstances that are hideous that have happened over and over again in the country when in a married couple, one of the people dies, the other gets foreclosed on and put out on the street with a lot of the reverse mortgages. These things are dangerous. Now, I said there are very, very, as I said up front, very, very rare circumstances where a reverse mortgage may make sense. And it's when you're out of all other options. You got no way to pay for your life, but you have that house sitting there that you're house rich but cash poor. But I recommend strongly any legitimate reverse mortgage provider will require you go through financial counseling first. Not a sales pitch, real financial counseling to see if it would make sense for you to do that reverse mortgage and that you understand completely what you're getting into. You also have to know who's responsible for the property taxes, as an example. Because if you don't budget for that and you're responsible, you can get foreclosed on and get kicked out. So I know those 30 to 60 second ads on TV make it seem like this is a nirvana, but most of the time, reverse mortgages are an uncorrectable, unmitigated, disaster. Be careful. Kenneth is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you. So you got a question for me.
How much life insurance and what type of policy?
All right. Well, give me some background about you, if you could.
34, engaged, getting married this year.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you. We bought a house last year, so we got a mortgage for 30 years, you know, and so on and so on.
Right. Neither of you coming into this marriage with children?
No, neither.
And are you intending to have kids at some point?
At some point.
Okay. All right. So the purpose at this moment to have life insurance is for her to protect you with a policy and you to protect her with a policy.
Okay.
And because of your age, you were at the ideal moment to buy what's known as 30-year level term.
Okay.
Where you have a policy that will stay in place for the core of your working lifetime till you're in your mid-60s.
Okay.
They're very cheap to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Is your health good and your fiance's health good?
Yes.
Great. So you should be able to do what's called medically underwrite. You also have to make sure the insurer you buy a level term policy from is itself financially healthy. And so you only want to buy a policy from a company rated A++ by AM Best.
Okay.
Now, this is easier than it might sound because I just threw out like three different things to you. You want to buy, each of you have a 30-year level term policy, which means mm-hmm. the premiums stay the same as they start and it stays the same for the next 30 years.
Okay.
And you buy from a company that's financially healthy and you're set. You today can buy a policy from a company that doesn't even require a medical exam because they use artificial intelligence and deep data to decide instantly if you're okay, and they'll issue it typically in a minute. And I've got a list of some of those on Clark.com. The pioneer of that is a company called Haven Life.
Okay.
So otherwise, what will happen with a typical level term policy is a nurse will come and see you, typically draw blood, do a lot of medical tests on you, and send in a report. So there's usually a delay of a couple of months from when you apply for a policy to when you get it.
Okay.
So either's fine, whichever way you want to do it.
Now, should I, like the company you mentioned, Haven Life, do they underwrite themselves or do they, you know,
that out? It's a subsidiary, if I remember right, of Mass Mutual.
Okay.
Which is a big, well-respected, financially healthy insurer.
Okay, that's what I'm worried about because, you know, if I buy $300,000 worth of coverage is only as good as who I'm buying it from.
Exactly,
you know,
so. And that's why the A++ I mentioned to you is the standard you should insist on.
Okay.
And any of the shopping sites will tell you the AM Best rating for an insurer.
Okay.
All right, and so you said 300,000, so let's deal with that.
Okay.
I'd like for you to buy 10 times your annual earnings.
Okay.
So whatever you earn.
I was about to ask you if there's a formula for that. So yeah.
Yeah, that's my formula. Most often people say 6 times, but particularly mm-hmm. when you're buying 30 years, you got inflation in front of you. You're going to earn more over time. I like for you to just keep it simple and you buy a 30-year level term 10 times your pay and your fiance does the same thing.
Okay. All right. That sounds good.
And so it's a really easy process. And then call me back once you have kids. We'll talk about how you insure properly for them.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Best to you and congratulations on your upcoming wedding.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, have
sure.
a good day.
Ella's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Ella. How are you doing?
Hi, Clark. I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Thank you. So you have an inheritance situation. And I want to tell you, I'm sorry about your loss of a loved one that there's an inheritance we're discussing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So my mom recently passed, and my son and my niece were beneficiaries on her life insurance. And so I'm just looking to educate myself the best way possible in how to invest these funds. My son is in sixth grade, so he only has six more years of school before we're looking at college. And I just wanted to know the best route to go. Was it a 529, some other type of investment for the funds?
And I'm sorry to ask the amount, but how much did your son, your sixth grader, inherit?
$51,500.
So also the niece inherited the same amount of money?
Yes.
All right. So let's talk about your son for a second, then we'll move on to your niece. So college over 4 years is going to cost more than that amount of money.
Absolutely.
So it would be, if college is in your family culture, that your son is going to be going to college, whether he likes it or not.
Yeah.
Then that would be a great move to just put that money into a 529 plan. And then basically your son is scholarshiped out, thanks to your late mom's generosity, for college.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And even if he goes to grad school, he's got money for that too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the 8-year-old niece, you said? Is that what you said? All right. Mm-hmm. Tell me about her.
So it's a kind of a different situation. So her parents are divorced. My brother is her father. And her parents, her mom is the primary custodial parent. And my concern is that there's some financial instability on both sides there.
Oh.
And as the primary administrator of my mom's estate, I didn't know, and this would probably be more of a legal issue, but I didn't know what right I had to invest the funds for her.
All right. So
for my niece.
That will depend on the wording of, now this was a beneficiary designation in a policy, not in a will. Is that right?
Right, in a policy. My mom was a teacher, and so this was her policy through the county and where she worked.
All right. So are you named as a trustee or anything, or how does
I haven't seen anything in the paperwork that we've received where I am the trustee of that. You know, we're going through probate right now. And it is kind of a tent, you know, my brother and I, you're not a therapist, but you know, my brother and I haven't spoken since my mom's funeral, which was 2 weeks
ago.
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
So
it's a real, real tough time, and I'm just trying to look out for her best interest here.
And the best way to do so, way to do so, and legally you may not be able to do this, is to establish a trust for the benefit of your 8-year-old niece, with you being the trustee.
Okay.
And if there's nothing worded and all it says is that the niece is the beneficiary of this, you're going to have a bit of a job to make that happen.
Okay.
And you'd probably end up at a point that you're going to need to be talking with a lawyer about that.
Right.
And you just say, so here's the deal. My brother won't speak to me. He and his ex-wife are not good with money. I want to make sure this money goes for the benefit of my niece. How do we do that? You just lay that out.
I
am so familiar with this kind of situation that every part of it you talked about, including the counseling part. I have a family, right? I know this stuff. So
right.
So I'm really sorry that in addition to grieving over the loss of your mom, you have these issues with your brother. And I know how difficult that is, but you've got obviously a good, genuine heart. You want to make sure that this 8-year-old niece is taken care of. And that's how you proceed on that. For your son, let's go back to him for 1 second.
Sure.
On the money for your son for college, I have a 529 plan guide on Clark.com.
Okay.
And I walk you through step by step where the money should be invested and what funds it should be invested in. And you'll know what to do. You can do the whole thing in 10 minutes once you see that.
Okay.
So that'll be easy. The niece, that's going to be more difficult. Again, all depending on the wording that led to her being the beneficiary of that money. Today's Clark Regis moment is kind of a shock, okay? Kids in elementary school carrying actual credit cards. That's right. Parents thinking, hey, you know, my kid should have a card and make him an authorized user or whatever on the card. And according to T. Rowe Price, nearly 1 in 5 children from elementary school to middle school age are now carrying an actual credit card, not a stored value card, not a debit card, a credit card. What could go wrong here? Well, a lot could go wrong. And including, I just heard a story from one of our staffers on Clark.com where a kid ran up $5,000 in charges, elementary school kid, having been given a card by a parent. That's what can go wrong. If you want to have some kind of plastic in the hands of a very young child, look at a stored value card, like a Bluebird or something like that, where the only money at risk is the money you have put on that card. A credit card for an elementary school kid? That is a Clark Regis idea. Don't do it. Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. So you want to have your dollar put in a shredder? There's a trend going on around the country you have got to be focused on. In mid-size and large cities, hospitals are buying up their competitor hospitals. And then, that's not enough, they're then buying up all kinds of other facilities like doctor practices, specialist practices, labs, outpatient centers, and all that. The hospitals are doing it to try to get a chokehold on medical care in an area. In even the biggest cities in the country, 3, maybe 4 hospital systems are trying to establish huge operations and own massive numbers of doctor practices to be able to have control over the market and be more powerful than the insurance companies they negotiate with. So what you got to know is that any facility, once it's purchased by a hospital, the price of any service goes through the roof. And the price differences are massive. It's not at all unusual if you go to a hospital for an MRI that you will pay 6 to 10 times the cost for an MRI as you would in an independent facility for an MRI. There was a new report that was in the New York Times about what happens with labs. That if you go have a lab test, and the differences in lab tests from one facility to another are amazing. One of the examples they give, a metabolic blood panel test, costs as little as $11 or as much as $1,000, depending on which place you go for it. And so this is part of what you and I face as consumers now that we have these large deductibles on health plans, or if you don't even have coverage at all and you're a private payer having to figure your way through this, you got to know these simple rules of the road. Anything you can avoid having at any facility in any way related to a hospital, you need to avoid having it done there. Because anything that is involved with a hospital will be 10 to 100 times more expensive than it would be at an independent. And that's just an automatic. Second, anything you're having done where you're responsible for a big portion out of pocket, copay, whatever, you have got to shop before you get the service. Because you have no idea what kind of bills you could face. In my TV work, I profiled some people recently who had things done that then after the fact got massive bills. And one of the people I profiled was a woman who has the shot she has to get a couple of times a year that she had been getting at a doctor's office and was paying $40 for the shot. Doctor's office stopped administering the shot, and she went to a hospital to have the shot. Hospital billed her $1,900 for a shot she'd been paying $40 for. $1,900 to give a shot. So we've got a real cost problem in medicine in the United States. And we've talked a lot about the problems with prescription drugs and all that. But the biggest problem going on right now, and the one you've got to be hyper-focused on, is what's happening all over the country with hospitals becoming gouge centers. They're there to make you well. Instead, what they do is they make you poor. Peter's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Peter. How can I serve you?
So me and my wife just bought a new house in the last year, and we had recently put up a new fence. One side of the fence is actually 4 feet into our property line. Well, now we have a neighbor who actually doesn't live next door to us. He's, a landlord, and he's going to rent out his house, but wants to build a privacy fence on his property and then tie into ours. Only issue is that their fence will extend about 4 feet into our property. And so he asked if he could do that, and we're just concerned over any liability reasons. Is it worth to even let him do it, or contractually, what do we have to write up to protect ourselves from any issues or liabilities?
I haven't had this question in like 10 years. Wow. Okay, so the answer then apparently is still completely valid today, because we've just looked it up, and it is that you just need a simple written agreement with the next door neighbor, the absentee landlord, that they are doing a lease of property from you for, you make it $1 a year or something like that. But it just needs to be a very, very simple thing that says that you were giving permission for him to build a fence that ties into the fence on your property, and that in return for being able to encroach on your property, that they have no future claim to your property, and that they are paying you $10 a year, $1 a year, whatever it is.
Okay.
And that you both sign that, date it, sign it. And in layman's terms, as specific as you can be in that is fine.
Okay. Is there a reason to tie a money amount to it?
It's just that's known in the law as consideration.
Okay.
That you are to receive something. What makes it a valid contract is you're receiving something for allowing him to have use of a portion of your property.
Okay.
And so also one other thing is required to make it a valid thing, and that is that it has to have a time limit on it.
Oh, okay.
That you're giving him the right to do this for, let's say, 5 years or 10 years or something like that.
And then at that point, we could reassess it.
Exactly. And who knows if that person will even be an owner at that point.
Sure.
Now, I have told you all this as a non-lawyer, but this is only for the purpose of protecting yourself from something that is known as adverse possession, where if you don't do something like this, that ultimately that encroachment, depending on the laws in each state, that encroachment could actually make it his property instead of yours. And that's why you do just this simple agreement.
As far as you know, them having that property, like part of our property within their fence line, if I don't know, some type of incident were to happen on our property, but in their fence line, could we be released of any liability of that within this contract, as far as you know?
I'm not qualified to speak on that.
Yeah, okay.
You just took me across the line. I'm not comfortable saying something.
Sure, sure. I understand that.
Yeah. But the chances anything's going to go wrong, Peter, so tiny that all we're doing here is you're just being a good neighbor, but at the same time not being a pushover.
Sure.
And so there's an advantage to the neighbor being able to tie in like this. There's really no good reason for you to say, nah, get lost. And you're just making sure that you're protected from that tie-in. Charles is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Charles.
Hey, Clark. I sure appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
I've been listening to catching up on all your podcasts while staying current with the current shows. It's been kind of all Clark all the time around my house.
Oh, I hope that's not causing you nightmares or sleepless nights.
No, some of the family loves you, some of the family hates you, but you know, no, I'm kidding about the hate part, but after the question, by the way, if there's time, I have a tip about that fuel skimmers I heard on the radio the other day on your show.
Sure.
So you've probably seen most of the question, which is that I have an auto loan and a student loan. They are $17,000 and $19,000 respectively. And I received some letters saying, hey, we can lower your payments, we can lower your interest. So I thought, yeah, why don't I just shop around, ask some questions, not let people ping my credit, but find out, you know, what they intend to do. Because I did go through the auto dealer. I didn't catch that show in time. Went through the auto dealer for the loan. So that is a 5.6 interest, and the student loan is a 5.
How old's the car?
What's that?
How old is the car?
It's a 17.
It's a 2017. All right.
We've only had it for 4 months.
Great. All right. Are you a member of a credit union?
No. I've been thinking about, you know, from listening to your show, going up and joining one.
Because if you join a credit union and you have a great credit score, you're going to find they're going to refinance that auto loan at somewhere for 2017, probably somewhere between 3 and 3.5%.
Well,
if you have a good credit score. A banks don't write loans that cheaply, so it's going to be hard for you to get enough of a difference in the loan that would be worth refiing the vehicle loan with the bank. The student loan you said is at 5%?
Yes.
Is that a federal loan or is that a private loan?
Federal, I believe. I combined them. I didn't, at that time, I didn't know about that either, not to combine them. So I think I did away with my private into the federal.
No, you probably did the opposite.
Be the other way around.
Yeah, maybe the opposite. You need to, before you do anything with the student loans, so the vehicle loan, that's easy. You just go, go join a credit union. You can shop on their websites first, see what their interest rates are, and say, hey, this is the credit union I want to be a member of. You just go join them and refi that car loan. On the student loans, you got to know what makes up the loans you have, and you're sure on the interest rate. And then you'll know if there's a move. If they are federal, you don't refi them. If they're private and you can find a lower rate, then it's fine for you to refi. And have you ever heard of SoFi?
I have. Through you, I believe. I had contacted them a little bit. To me, even 1% is a savings.
No doubt. So, no doubt. Especially with a $19,000 student loan balance. So if SoFi wants you, they're the biggest player in this refinancing thing. If they want you and they'll offer you a good rate, I think that's fine for you to grab. But go ahead, go ahead and get that vehicle loan done and then figure out what you got in those student loans. How many years do you plan to take to pay off the student loans?
I am hoping to have both the auto and the student loans paid off in 3 years.
Right. The vehicle loan pay off as agreed, whatever you refi you go into.
Okay.
It's the student loans you want to pay off quicker if you can.
Okay. And I was thinking about taking a little longer with the auto loan to help my wife's credit. When we met her, we've been married for almost 2 years now, about a year and a half, and I've helped her go from around 300s to she has 688 and 714 depending on, you know, which you look at with the you know, the TransUnion and Equifax.
Well, she had to really work hard to get that score at 300. Now, hit me quickly with what you wanted to tell me, because we're short of time here.
The fuel skimmers, what we do is we have a select fuel station that we like to use. We get points anyway by buying their store fuel cards. So we go inside, and even if you don't get points, it'll still make it safer at the pump. We go inside and spend $25, $50, or $100 and get one of their store cards, or we put money on our one we already have.
Now that is really smart to go inside. You know, if you're not familiar with the skimmers at the pumps, they're an enormous problem. It's the weakest part of the payment system in the United States for cards being present. And so if you are paying any way other than with a credit card, go inside to pay for your gasoline. It's the only safe way to protect yourself. Steve is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Steve, you're headed to Europe.
We are thinking about it. Really enjoy your work, Clark.
Thank you.
I've learned a lot over the years from you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Well, my wife and I want to take our 12-year-old daughter to Europe. She has her passport, and we've been trying to plan a trip for a while and just haven't had the opportunity. And what I wanted to know, is there an easy way to plan a multiple city trip? A trip to Paris is pretty easy to plan. Get your airfare, get your hotel, and you're done with it. But we'd like to see a couple of different cities and not lock ourselves into just one place.
How many cities do you think you want to go to?
Well, we have 10 days, so we're thinking two or three, probably three if we could swing it.
And are you thinking of doing London, Paris, or are you thinking of staying on the continent?
Probably on the continent this time around anyway.
All right. This will be really easy. You know, particularly if you stay within France, the French rail is so good. And you can go on the TGV trains, which go so quickly. And if you book them enough in advance and you're flexible what time you take a train on a day, those fares will be very affordable. So it's not going to be hard at all, believe it or not.
What about if we were to fly back from a different city? If we did Paris and, say, Berlin?
So you're violating a Clark Howard rule here. You got to go wherever you get the cheapest fare, wherever that is. And, you know, the price differences from one place in Europe to another over the last couple of years have been so extreme, just depending on whatever sale pops up, that I would just go with whatever the deal is. And then you plan your ground transportation, you know, your train travel typically based on wherever you've ended up with on the deal. Because fares to Europe have dropped as low as into the twos round trip over the last few months.
Yeah, that's part of what's been prompting us to look into it a lot more because the prices have come down.
So what I recommend, since airfare is such a big chunk of a trip, is you just keep watching the prices. And you could, you heard me talk about Scott's Cheap Flights?
Yes.
Yeah, so Scott's is probably the best go-to for you to find a cheap deal to Europe for when you want to go with your daughter. And so subscribe to Scott's. There's a free version, a paid version, and you get a lot more alerts and you get them quicker on the paid version. When a deal pops up somewhere in Europe, bam, you buy it. And then everything else comes into focus. You then figure out from it where all you end up going on your trip. And I believe that TripAdvisor will be extremely helpful to you in planning your visit to each city and what sites you want to go, and also help you figure out where you're going to stay. And go look at my guide to booking on Priceline, especially for Paris, Berlin, Frankfurt, any big European city. Priceline will save you a ton on your hotel. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.